Hello and welcome to the second exciting episode of the Rancor Pit. We are back in business and ready to talk some Star Wars. Of course, with me is my incredible co-host, Eddie Medina.
Hello, everybody, and I'm glad to be back and anxious to tackle tonight's big topic.
In fact, tonight's big topic is Star Wars Comes Home. This is going to be pretty much anything that got the Star Wars label slapped on it, good and bad. Basically the marketing phenomenon, the merchandising phenomenon. And who better to join us than a fellow collector who has some serious expertise in this area, our special mystery guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Jeffrey Carlton, the author of the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish Book.
Hey, how's that, kids? Can we get some great guests or what?
Hooray!
It doesn't hurt if you happen to know Jeffrey Carlton, author of the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish Book, as a friend since before the first one was published.
That's right. And plus, Steven Sansweet wanted to be on this episode, but we said, no, sir. We already got the lineup for this one. You'll have to wait for a future
episode. That's right. We snubbed Sansweet for this one, as far as you know. So basically, what we're talking about here, as I said, was the whole merchandising phenomenon, which is really one of the reasons that Star Wars, one of the things that just helped bolster what was already a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And how do you go from the silver screen to pretty much everything you will ever use in your entire life and then some?
I believe Underoos paved the way, if you ask me.
I think Underoos paved the way for a lot of
things. Are the underwear that's fun to wear.
It is indeed. The underwear that's fun to wear. I'm shocked to hear the actual slogan.
You know, when you wear it long enough, it kind of rubs off on you.
Hey, I still wear my Underoos from the 70s. They're really tight, but, you know, they're
from the 70s?
Yeah.
You know, they still make Star Wars Underoos, correct?
I saw that. In fact, you had sent me a picture of
Clone Wars Underoos.
Yes, I was like, what, they're still Underoos? That's still around?
They actually revived the license and the slogan, just like when Hasbro revamped the Kenner name to bring the vintage figure line on. This has gotten so insane that even underwear is bringing back that which made Star Wars mighty. It's really quite a movement to bring Star Wars back into the mainstream as if it wasn't already there.
I caught that pun. Did you catch the pun? You know, underwear and movement in the same sentence?
Well, what one of those shows?
This is a Jedi Cole Universe show, after all, so you're going to hear stuff like this. But, you know, it's funny. It's almost as if Underoos and Kenner and other things that were part of bringing Star Wars to the forefront in merchandising, now Star Wars is bringing those things back. Star Wars is already here, and now they're bringing back Underoos.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's like there's a void.
There were the dark years, or so they call them, from 86 to 93, with quite a bit of the merchandising after the prequels. Those have also, by some collectors, been referred to as the darker years. Clone Wars has actually brought us out of the merchandising. After episode 1 and 2, there was a glutton of merchandise that didn't work out, which is unfortunately because episode 3 was, in my opinion, the best of the prequels. And by that time, merchandising had just sort of given up on Star Wars.
Episode 1 killed that.
Yes, it did. Everybody had such high hopes in the merchandising field. I mean, there were entire companies that went out of business because of as much as they invested into the licensing. Hope Industries had a whole series of watches, which I don't know the number they spent out of license, but there are just all sorts of Hope Industry watches, and you'll find nothing made by Hope Industry after the year 2000. They just absolutely folded over the amount that they invested in Star Wars.
Wow.
That is crazy.
So
I mean, it was everywhere.
Hope to no hope.
It was crazy when episode one came out. There was like, you know, you had the Taco Bell license, you had Doritos and Pepsi. Man, Pepsi was slapping Chewbacca, R2, and 3PO on everything. That was with the special editions.
Yeah, you're thinking 97.
There you go.
But, no, then they were slapping
episode one did the 24 can series.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that the one with the gold Yoda can?
The, Gold Yoda.
It is. You could win $20 with a gold Yoda can or $10 instant winner underneath plastic caps. And the sad part was, I'm an avid Coca-Cola drinker, so that was really a painful marketing scheme for me. You have no idea how much Pepsi I half it and poured the other half out. Yes, I was forced to.
Wow.
The whole Star Wars force aspect.
Quite literally.
I feel your pain because I'm a Dr. Pepper fan. But that's what you do as a Star Wars fan, I guess.
It's those little sacrifices, like wearing colorful underwear.
Hey, now. Colleen has no complaints about that, so you watch yourself.
We were speaking of the darker years. Are they now calling what we used to call the dark years the darker years, or are they trying to equate the post-episode two as darker than the ghastly years where there wasn't?
They're lining up. The prequel years are actually referred to as the darker years. The reason being, the dark years, there was nothing available for us. The darker years, there was plentiful available for us, and we just didn't want it.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes a little more sense there, because I lived through the dark years, and you don't get much darker than that kind of forced fact. I'll tell you how bad it got. I collected G.I. Joe figures.
That's extreme.
But toward the end of that dark era, I remember when the announcement first came that they were reviving the action figure line, and when they released those first photos of the initial wave.
He-Man Luke and Monkey Face Leia.
Yeah, there you go, the monkey face Leia. But even though we make fun of that line now because they're all just steroid up and just really bad sculpts, at the time, man, it was just such an exciting thing to see. I remember telling a coworker, I was like, man, have you seen the Chewbacca? It's not just like a solid brown figure. There's actually, you know, there's some different tones in it and such. And it was just, to me, it was just so exciting to see that first initial promotional piece that detailed all the Wave 1 figures. Even though the vehicles...
I'm almost embarrassed to go here. The reason I was excited about the action figures in 95, The Power of the Force 2, is because I had just gotten done getting excited over the Bendems from 1993.
Now, when things are so bad
that you get a Bendems figure and you're excited, oh my gosh, look at this, it's Han Solo, and look how you can bend him.
It's like those little Jack-in-the-Box Jacks they used to give away in the 70s.
That's right. So, yes, I was ecstatic to see the action figures come back online, because then I could slowly distance myself away from the Bendems.
Oh, thank goodness, too, because that's the first time I ever heard anyone say, use excited and Star Wars Bendems in the same sentence.
I was guilty of getting that line, too, because, just so desperate to get anything Star Wars related that when the Bendems came out, that was a big deal.
Well,
but the Bendems were educational, though. Bendems were one of the first products in the modern era that actually had variations that were being tracked by collectors.
Wow.
There were patching variations and bubble variations, and actually the card backs changed from generation to generation. So although people began seeing the Power of the Force, two things that had changed is because we were still watching the packaging after the Bendems. What we thought was a fiasco, little did we realize it was the new way of life for us.
Yeah.
That's interesting because the collector perception, especially during that period coming into the new Kenner later / Hasbro line, I remember a couple of things. There was a story someone had imparted, I think, in a toy collecting magazine. When Hasbro first released a box set reproducing four vintage figures or something like that.
Yeah.
That was the 1995 Toys R Us exclusive.
Exactly. There was a story of a toy dealer who got his hands on one of these and apparently drop kicked it into the rafters. Presumably because he saw it as a threat to his lucrative vintage figure gouging.
Oh, wow.
And the other thing that was really actually even more frightening and pathetic at the time was the initial release, and I'm sure Jeffrey will remember this well, the card backs on those initial releases had a serial number for each figure.
Yes, they did.
That ended in a, if I remember correctly, .00.
Uh-huh.
And then later releases were .01.
Yeah.
And at the time, Catherine and I had come by a massive quantity of Star Wars figures at a very good price. We were able to literally go to conventions and sell them for just a hair above retail or right at around store retail at conventions where you're expecting to pay a lot more. And I remember people very meticulously, well, do you have any more? And they would rifle through all of our extras, all of our duplicates, inspecting each card.
You have 5 Hoth hands. Do you have any more? I must look at them.
Yeah, and they were looking. I don't want these. They're not double zero. And I just wanted to say, you know, this is the only time that anyone's going to care.
Yeah.
You don't understand. No one will care a year from now or 2 years from now or 10 years from now.
I had forgotten about that little tidbit.
The serialization on the back had to do with the card back versus the figure configuration on the front. But what they didn't take into account was the collection number and or the bubble variation. So you can have like a .01 on an old bubble and a .01 on a new bubble and a .01 with the wrong collection number. So you can't just stop there.
Well, I just have to jump right back into the collecting game on that one. But let's kind of roll the clock back a bit before, you know, the earliest, before there was anything to collect. And, of course, there's the infamous, is the Darth Vader Lives pen or button effectively the earliest Star Wars thing to hit the market?
You're talking about Darth Vader?
Darth Vader, yes, V-A-D-A-R. I offered on eBay and was tempted, but thought, you know, that would be so easy to fake.
There's actually a licensed, it's not necessarily collectible, but the licensed merchandise goes back to 76, even before the infamous convention when they were trying to peddle and eventually picked up Kenner. And that's the Valentine book with the McQuarrie art on the cover.
Wow, that's a good point, yes. I guess technically that would be the...
Yeah, as far as I know, that is the furthest back licensed item. You know, obviously there are the prototypes and the other good stuff, which we'll never get to see in person. But yeah, as far as the mass market origination, it's my belief that that paperback book is actually what started it all.
And so it went. And then, of course, I don't think you could talk Star Wars and merchandising and not touch on... I don't want to talk strictly about toys, but it's kind of hard to do when you have three toy collectors in the room, as it were. Pretty much the one that started it all for Star Wars as a toy line and reinvented the boys' toy industry, and that would be the amazing Early Bird set from Kenner.
Ah, yes, the cardboard box.
Yes, sir.
It's the first time that packaging had more value than the figures. A tradition that lends true to it today.
That is very true. And I was the fortunate recipient that very Christmas of an Early Bird set, which, by the way, if you know that it exists, is painfully obvious under the tree.
Because what could that be? It's too small for Spirograph.
That's true. And, it, you know, while flat like a record album, and as we've begun to say on the show, remember, kids, Google record album. You know, it certainly had the wrong dimensions. So it was.
Well,
it was
one of the unfortunate many who's never actually owned an Early Bird certificate. I've seen one. I've touched one. I have the Early Bird Luke with the true double telescoping lightsaber, but I've never owned the certificate. So that's a sad point for me.
That is a sad tale.
And it's one more reason to be jealous of Jedi Cole.
But my Early Bird certificate was filled out with my name, address, and probably age, if I remember correctly, and promptly mailed off to Kenner. And the just terrible long, long wait. The longest 6 to 8 weeks of my life waiting for that nondescript box to arrive in the mail with its little plastic tray full of goodness. It's starting
to make them stand.
And another thing on the subject of the old Kenner line that was kind of unique, and I don't know if they just knew they had a cash cow or if this was in every Play-Doh fuzzy pumper barber shop or whatever you bought from Kenner back then, but the We Really Do Care certificate.
Oh, yes.
That was...
I'm trying to remember. There was actually a marketing campaign that went along with that, and I'm drawing a blank at the moment what it was called, but there was actually a seal on the package guaranteeing that you would enjoy the toy.
Oh, wow. Well, the neat thing was that if you got your wonderful toy in and something, you know, snapped off an assembly or wasn't there, or if you wanted to be really devious, I actually invoked the We Really Do Care when I broke my 12-inch Jawa.
What? My Jawa didn't come with a blaster.
Exactly, yeah. If you wanted to really build up a stockpile of figure blasters and stuff. In fact, a friend of mine had lost the gun to Princess Leia, which was, you know, the vintage Leia gun was just this side of macroscopic.
Yeah.
He sent away to Kenner. They sent him a whole pile of weapons. I guess it was just easier to give you a fistful of, you know, like a prepackaged bag full of everything that they'd produced up to that point, which, you know, wasn't a lot. There wasn't a lot of variety there yet. And the arm broke on my 12-inch Jawa. Well, when you took his cloak and his bandoliers off, you noticed that the body of it, the hollow body, is actually held together by a couple of Phillips head screws. So I was actually able to, unlike most toys, you could disassemble it. I very meticulously took him apart, took the broken arm. Actually, no, it was the thumb had broken off from putting his blaster in, mailed that to Kenner. And a couple of weeks later, much to my surprise, this package arrives with an unopened 12-inch Jawa.
Wow, sweet.
The flap had been, of course, bent around to fit it into the box, but to, you know, make it uniform.
Well, it's just packaging. You tear that out and throw it away anyway, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you cut your proof of purchase seal out just in case. And, yeah, you toss the rest. But I was like, wow, you know, for the longest, I still had a spare Jawa cloak, bandolier, and gun. That I probably, once I got into convention dealing, sold off years ago. That got you thinking that, you know, if you really wanted to be devious, you could probably put together anything you wanted.
Yeah.
Build a Death Star piecemeal with your friends.
There you go.
I was going to ask the both of y'all, Cole, you probably just answered. So was the Early Bird gift set, was that the first Star Wars collectible you owned?
That really was. I think at that point, that was about all you could own.
Yeah.
You know, I think there were other things. At one point I believe these are unlicensed. There was like kind of crude line drawing of a Tusken Raider on a Bantha and a couple of Jawas that were these big buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Were those unlicensed, Jeffrey?
The fan club had some out, but not in the manner that you're describing.
And years ago I sold them off.
Oh, all evidence is gone. Oh, no,
yes,
photos didn't happen.
So. I think these were some unlicensed things that somebody put out. But yes, the earliest actual official thing I recall was the Early Bird set.
Okay.
Because the first toy in the stores from Kenner, there were some painting sets. Because Kenner had already had these paint-by-number things with like little pots of paint that were... Have these unique capsules that you would...
Yeah, those are the Kenner Dippin' Dots.
The Dippin' Dots, yeah. And I think there were some other just, you know, things that they could put out quick and cheap just to get the ball rolling. But the Early Bird set was the first thing that got that line launched. And that was actually the first point where you had that 3 3/4 inch or that small scale of an action figure.
Yeah,
versus
exactly.
A G.I. Joe or Captain Action Size. Figure.
Or Mego.
Yeah, Mego, I guess, was the next one to downsize a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Jeffrey, do you remember your first Star Wars purchase?
Sort of. I remember my first Star Wars acquisition, as it were, and that was after the movie, we got to go to Burger Chef, where I got not only a Fun Meal tray, but my father actually laid out for a poster for me. And that's where I learned that Derp Valid's name was not Derp Valid. He was, in fact, Darth Vader.
Oh, wow. So do I get the impression that was a mishearing on your part?
Yeah, well, you know, when you're excited and staring at the screen, names, you know, who pays attention to those?
Yeah.
We talked just the last episode about Let the Monkey Win. So.
Yeah. That's got to be on a T-shirt that we make for the podcast.
I think so. That'll be our all-con T-shirt there is Let the Monkey Win.
I have a story for that, too. My mother was convinced that Han was calling the monkey Julie. So she was sure that Han and Julie were a team. They were a pair, if you were.
Actually, she probably just mistook him for Julebaka. Or
Julie.
Must be. Oh, wow.
Yep, so in our world, it was Han and Julie and Derp Valid.
Derp Valid. I like that.
That's crazy.
It was quite the adventure in our house.
It was Julie the monkey at this point.
Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think of my first Star Wars purchase, and I know it was action figures, and I know we went to Best.
Best Products.
Yeah, Best. We went to the Best there at Redbird Mall, and if I'm not mistaken, we got, I want to say it was Luke and Ben and I think a Jawa, if I'm not mistaken. It was those three, but it's been so long, and Vic would probably know better than I do.
Is it a vinyl cape Jawa?
It was, okay, the vinyl cape one is the rare one, is that correct?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was, but I'll tell you one story that Vic likes to tell. When we went to the Sears Outlet store downtown, and this was when Star Wars was, you know, starting to, all the heat was dying down, all the excitement. I know that's shameful to say on a podcast like this, but, you know, we went to the outlet store. And Vic remembers very clearly an entire end cap full of nothing but vinyl cape Jawas on clearance. And if I'm not mistaken, he said they're like, I want to say they're either 99 cents or 49 cents.
Could have been as low as 49 because the first figures, at least in this area, were $1.99 retail.
Okay. Yeah. So they were marked down clearance, and you know, they couldn't give them away. And I thought, oh man, if anybody had the foresight to just buy out that entire end cap, could you imagine?
But you know, even 49 cents a piece is a lot of change to put out for a bunch of action figures back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people who were analyzing the sales trends actually thought that the vinyl cape job was were the inferior ones, because if you look at the accessory with the action figure, one, you got a piece of cut-out vinyl. The other, you actually have a stitched cloth cape.
Yeah.
So obviously the stitched cloth cape would be the preferential figure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in fact, I never saw the vinyl cape Jawa on open shelves. In fact, I never saw the Jawa on open shelves. Someone else tracked one down for me.
Yeah.
And well, then you didn't have a Myers Toy World.
No, we did not. We had, what was the name of that shop at the Redbird Mall before it became Circus World? It was...
Oh, the where everything was like double the price.
That's the one.
At, you know, Kmart would have them for $1.49, and this place would have them for like $3.50.
This is what I love about having Eddie on the show, by the way, is we have this wonderful frame of reference for the same Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Yeah.
Because not only can I envision the best products at Redbird Mall, that is actually where my friend Steve and I followed a kid around for half an hour because we knew his parents weren't going to buy him an Ewok figure.
Oh, my God.
It's a classic tale.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the store, but yeah, it was like a Circus World KB Toys type place.
Well, and, we were seeing in the Dallas Times Herald.
Uh-huh.
Again, going back a ways. There was a big article about the Star Wars toys, and they showed a picture there in black and white of Luke and maybe Leia and a Jawa, and I thought, what a bunch of idiots, they put Ben's cape on the Jawa.
Oh my gosh. But the licensing alone, I mean, since we're talking about licensing, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we thought things were crazy back in 78, by the time everything really started to hit. You think about how crazy, just crazy things got with everyone had to have Star Wars on everything. But if you really think about it, it's even crazier now, because who in their right mind would have thought that one day you would get a Star Wars-themed Mr. Potato Head or Star Wars Transformers or Disney and Muppet characters as mashups as the actual Star Wars characters? I mean, if you think about it, there's much crazier off-the-wall things now than you could ever have imagined. I mean, Angry Birds, Star Wars.
Yeah, that's one I definitely didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different era, though, also. You have to remember when the first Expanded Universe line came out in 98. It was a flop. It wasn't the Star Wars characters. Nobody wanted Luke in Imperial Guard disguise, even though it was a primary character. And what the heck was a Snoova? There was a point there where if it wasn't mainstream Star Wars, nobody would go for it. And that's why you didn't have all the crossovers. It took an evolution of the fandom in order to accept, you know, that other things can enjoy Star Wars as well.
If there's not a night goes by,
I don't cry myself to sleep saying, what is a Snoova?
It's a Julian disguise, of course.
Of course, naturally.
Oh, my gosh. The same kind of can be said with Shadows of the Empire. It didn't seem like Shadows of the Empire went over very well.
Shadows of the Empire was unique because if you want to talk licensing, that was just an attempt to browbeat the idea of licensing to death.
Yeah.
It was basically the idea was to generate interest in Star Wars again, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
On multiple platforms, though, in order to get the entire story, you had to read the comic books, which were slightly different from the book, which were slightly different from the video game, and even the soundtrack had aspects of the storyline that wasn't available in any other medium.
That's right.
Shadows of the Empire was almost a scavenger hunt for Star Wars. In order to know the complete story, you had to collect everything, or else you just didn't get it all.
And yet, it just never really caught on, I think, because of... It might have been a bit of overkill in a sense.
Yeah, they spread it a little bit thin. The people who read the novels really don't care about the video game or the comic books. And likewise, the comic book people, you know, they're not going to go listen to the soundtrack to figure out, you know, what details are missing. So while it was great for the all-encompassing, the problem was whatever piece of media that you enjoyed wasn't the whole story, and it was that incompleteness. If you didn't want to go find everything, then it was an incomplete story, and why bother with it? And
that was
their failure, was they were trying to broaden the market, and all they did was they isolated people, gave them bits and pieces about everything, and people gave up on it.
Yeah.
It's almost like that later game system Atari tried to the 4200, I believe it was. where they then tried to like have video games where you would, it was supposed to be like, you know, this is the first in a series, back before that was a good idea. Of course, nowadays, you know, you're on Super Mario Brothers 300 and, they had this ambitious plan to have this sort of Zodiac-based video game series and ultimately get you to buy all 12 games, and I don't think it made it past the second.
Wow.
It's the Pokemon Silver cartridge. It's the Pokemon Purple cartridge.
That's right. Gotta buy them all.
The cartridge change, game stays the same. What's up with that? I don't understand.
Of course, you know, just talk about video games. The earliest licensed video games were that Empire Strikes Back Atari could not have been more crude.
Uh-huh.
The one where you're fighting the AdX and the Snow Speeder, which is just like two rectangles on top of each other.
Yeah.
Precisely. You know, you put enough squares together, you could pretend it's an AT-AT.
Yeah, yeah. I played that game to death. I remember because to destroy the AT-AT, you'd have to look to the little blinking light that was always in a different place on the AT-AT.
But then there was that bat about that would always steal your sword. Oh, that's Adventure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, hold on a second.
I played that game to death. I don't remember the bat.
But talking about the video games, the arcade Star Wars game that came out was, to me, for the time, was just amazing because it had like that frame wirework kind
of... The vector graphics.
There you go, there you go.
It was the second ever vector graphics game after Star Castle, which was the first.
Oh, wow, see, I didn't know that. And I remember our Brahms had one, and we wasted so much money going down to Brahms and playing that Star Wars game to death. And it was just so cool because it actually had the X-Wing handles that you could grab onto and, you know, control. And if you're really lucky, you found an arcade that had the sit-down version, so you actually got into it and sat down, and you really felt like you were, like, in a flight simulator. For back then, it was about as cutting edge as you could get.
Yeah, if you didn't get in line behind that creep with, like, you know, $17 worth of tokens stacked up next to the seat.
Yeah, the Aladdin's Castle never put a cap on how long you'd be.
Aladdin's Castle.
Yeah, you could. There was no time limit. You had, you know, so yeah, you could park yourself there for 3 hours if you had like $5 worth of tokens.
The other thing that I liked about that game is it's, I don't know where it ranks numerically, but it was one of the first that actually had digital voices that sounded proper.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
You had the movie synthesized voices, which again I don't think it's really the movie. I think it was just voice, but to go from the Defender area with the pew 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 to actually have Ben Kenobi talk to you, you know, as you put your quarter into the game. I mean, that just sucked you right in.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that part of the game. And actually, yeah, you had the voiceover on it. Wow.
Let's talk a little bit about how Star Wars winds up invading your day-to-day life. And I guess the earliest example of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeffrey, is say like Dixie Cups.
So first of all, I want to ask this. Is it really invading your life if you throw the doors wide open and invite it in?
Not really. I guess it's sort of like vampires. You invite them in, you're on your own.
Yep. All right, so, Dixie Cups. I'm back on topic. Dixie Cups. Got it.
So now we know that Star Wars is a vampire.
But Dixie Cups didn't break their way into the bathroom first. Quickly, what was the first bathroom collectible for Star Wars?
Oh, would it be?
Come on, you can do this.
Would it be Kenner's electric toothbrush?
It was. Ding, 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 ding,
oh, wow.
Ding, ding. By almost 3 years.
Wow. I didn't realize there was that big a deal. That would explain why when I had my Kenner electric toothbrush at the age of about 12, it was years before I could, you know, rinse my mouth out with a proper, a proper Dixie cup full of water, courtesy
that's
of
that's right. You just had a mouthful of foam.
So, yeah, that's and I didn't realize there was that big a gap there before the... And, of course, you know, nowadays, you fast forward enough years that there is almost nothing you can't get from toasting your bread with a lovely emblazoned image of Vader to...
Yeah.
To the brand new Death Star tea infuser, now available from ThinkGeek.com.
Oh, well, there you go. Yes. You can open bottles. You can flip your pancake.
Don't get the R2-D2 pizza cutter, now available at ThinkGeek.com.
And there's an R2-D2 spatula. I just saw that today.
There's a
from William Sonoma.
There's a Darth Vader spatula in my kitchen.
Oh, yeah?
That was used to flip sausages the other morning.
Impressive. Most impressive.
There you go.
Be nice to have a little sound chip in there and kind of like breathe while you turn on a vent.
You know, you're talking about
another amazing kitchen sound about Jedi Cole.
Yeah, there you go. talking about housewares, I remember a couple of really neat items that I've liked to track down sometime. As one of them was a soap dish, if I remember correctly, that looked like a land speeder.
Made by Sigma.
There you
indeed,
go. And,
indeed it was. For a while there, I actually had one that a friend of ours had given his collection to us to sell
for
him.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
3 or 4 years later, I finally started selling it for him.
Wow.
But yes, for a while there, we actually had one we took around to conventions.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that and the snow speeder toothbrush holder. I've only seen these pictures. I've never seen one in person, but I thought, man, that would be so cool to have in the bathroom. But as far as housewares, the creme de la creme that I want to get, mostly for just as a conversation piece, is the provocative C-3PO tape dispenser.
Those are difficult to find with the cutting blade on them. A lot of those are still kicking around, but the cutting blade has broken off. And for some reason, it seems to be a little bit longer than a standard cutting blade. I still have two? I even have one or two, neither with the blades. And I was on a quest for about a year and a half to find a blade that would fit it and look right, and I failed. So I still have at least one bladeless tape dispenser. I may have two.
That is why you fail.
Yes. Next time I dig in to the hangar, if you will, I'll keep an eye out, see how many I've got. Maybe I can spiff you one.
Okay. That was the one
that Legend had. It was never produced. I've talked to people who, I think, misinterpreted Anthony Daniels' remarks on that particular piece.
Uh-huh.
I think that was ultimately the only one he couldn't sign off on personally.
Yeah.
Because as he described it, it was C-3PO at the gynecologist.
Yes, that's what I mean by provocative.
And the only time 3PO was more provocative was that Topps card that got out.
Well, yeah, that too. It always seems to be C-3PO. I don't know what the deal is. But if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, go to Google Images and Google C-3PO tape dispenser and then C-3PO trading card or Topps card, and you'll see what we're talking about.
We'll put a picture of the tape dispenser up. We will not put up the trading card, however. And I can't help but wonder on that trading card how many kids had that in their stacks of Topps cards and never knew it, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because I've seen pictures of it, and it really, you know, way back when. I think I may have even actually seen a specimen of one that someone showed me, and it was like, okay, that's card number whatever. They're like, no, look. Okay,
wow.
Yeah, sure.
And speaking of items, Star Wars items that they came out with that were really bad ideas, the one that gets me is the Jar Jar Binks lollipop toy thing where...
Jar Jar.
Yeah, the French Kiss Jar Jar, where it's Jar Jar's head, his mouth is wide open, and they have this ginormous candy tongue sticking out. And the concept is you were actually supposed to suck on his tongue because it was the candy. And I thought,
have to slap him in the back of the head and make him stick it out.
Oh, is that how it works? Well, there you go. Everybody wants to slap Jar Jar.
That got nine kinds of fetishists there real quick.
No doubt. Oh, my gosh. It's like, what are they thinking when they come out with stuff like this? But anyway.
Maybe that was one of the companies that went out of business as a result of Episode 1 merchandising.
But Jar Jar has always been kind of a horse to beat there. I don't know if you remember, but at last Star Wars Celebration, there's the official Jar Jar Binks whoopee cushion.
I do indeed remember it. The only thing that made the Jar Jar Binks whoopee cushion unappealing was its amazing price. I think they were like 20 or 30 bucks.
Yeah, I think it was 30 or 35, but it was up there.
Yeah, and what was odd, and I'm glad you bring up Celebration, because that's a really unique thing. If you've never been to one, I finally had the good fortune to go last year to Celebration 6, which I probably talked about ad nauseum. Eddie, you could tell me if this is the case, somewhere on nearly every podcast I've ever done since.
Yeah. you definitely go into very excruciating detail on a Hey Kids Comics. I'm
okay,
not for sure.
You don't have to really rub it in or anything. Yeah. In fact, we spent an amazing long weekend hanging out with none other than our guest this evening.
And, me, yeah. I was there.
You were there, yes. And the really fun thing about that
You and I stood in line behind that guy who bought all the statues.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got to stand in a really long line at the end of the day in the official Celebration store. And what was really unique about that, and I hope for the next one this continues, and Jeffrey, would you say that was pretty... I mean, have you been to all of them?
I missed Celebration 1.
Okay.
I wasn't there in 99.
from 2 forward, would you say that the Celebration store, was that, did they have that at 2, and then going forward, did, you know, did 6 just blow away 5s, or?
I'm going to have to say, are you talking about quality of merchandise?
Yeah,
number
quality
of people or layout, or
volume of merchandise. The, because everything in the Celebration store was pretty, was unique to the Celebration store.
You're not going to like my answer. I'm sorry.
Oh, quite all right.
So, Celebrations 2 and 3 had, in my opinion, a more robust variety of merchandise. The more recent Celebrations, the merchandise has been really commercialized. You've got 15 different T-shirts. You've got 5 different glasses. You've got, you know, 5 different dog tags or keychains or what have you. Everything is really kind of streamlined for standardized merchandise that they're selling just to the public. If you walk into a Celebration store, it looks like you walk into a regular retail outlet with everything marked Star Wars. The previous Celebrations, especially around the Celebration 2, Celebration 3 era, was a lot of eclectic stuff that would not sell to the general public that I, as a collector, absolutely snapped up. Star Wars bottle caps, for instance. I mean, they probably would have done well at later Celebrations, but that wasn't the type of mainstream merchandise they were looking for.
Yes.
So I would almost have to say that while the stores were, unfortunately, much worse organized, Celebration 3, they actually shut the store down 2 days out of 4 because they couldn't get people in enough. It just was not well laid out. But the selection of merchandise and their choice of products was much more interesting to me as a collector.
No, it's a good point, because I have the frame of reference of just the one, and it occurred to me that it would, I didn't have any kind of real insight into what had come before. And
yeah, if you're into T-shirts and ball caps and stuff that everybody in the general public will wear, that the Celebration store was fine. And that may have been the problem, was that in the earlier Celebrations, they were drawing a lot of general public, and there were a lot of collectibles there that if you're not a collector, if you're not blowing your money on buying everything and get Star Wars on it, it didn't interest people as much.
That's a good point as well. They probably had to adjust their choices according to the types of things that would be a sure sell, because I'm guessing they must have a sort of finite license behind everything they produced, like a time-sensitive license.
I know nothing about the licensing as far as Celebration goes.
Because I know that there's something, a phenomenon that goes on with a lot of licensed products in Japan, not necessarily Star Wars, but in some cases, but they're literally like, A licensee will have a license that's like good for 24 hours for, say, like an event or a convention. Mm-hmm. And that literally they produce this stuff for sale for 24 hours and then they can't.
Right, and then technically it's destroyed when secretly it's shipped to the U.S. and sold to people like me.
Precisely. or blown out the back door to whoever's got the wads of cash at the end of the day. But,
just like the 300th Boba Fett with a misprinted box.
I guess, you know, without having, sort of going into Celebration 6 with no great frame of reference before, but I thought they made some really cool choices with things like the Tauntaun Hobby Horse.
Now, yes, they did have the unique things that drew out the excitement in me. But again, as you just pointed out, the really cool stuff like the Whoopee Cushion and the Tauntaun Hobby Horse, $30 plus.
Exactly. And
okay, If I go to Walmart and buy a hobby horse, that's $8. If it's a Tauntaun head, oh, look, $45. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the Tauntaun.
Or you can get a
tempting
T-shirt for $15. Take your choice.
Yeah.
That one was very tempting to me, but it was, at that point, I'd already spent a lot of money on other things. And in fact, of all of the Celebration 6 exclusives, the higher end one, the $30 and up one that impressed me the most was that Gamorrean Guard piggy bank. Because in the weeks leading up to the show, all you ever got to see was the schematic line drawing in color. They didn't show any production sample pictures or anything anywhere I'd seen. And we get there, and the thing is twice as big as I expected for the price point.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
And it was ceramic. I thought it was going to be plastic. And when you walk up...
Yeah, that's probably one of the highest quality collectibles that they put out at that Celebration. That really knocked, I don't know about you, really knocked my socks off.
And if you happen to be attending AllCon 2014, I'm going to go have a little plug here for our friends at AllCon. My department, Games and Theory, the Game Show Department, Half-Ass Productions, Jedi Cole Universe, and United States of Geekdom, all of our productions, or most of them throughout the entire AllCon weekend, will be giving away raffle tickets where you could win this or next year's grand prize, a Celebration 6 Gamorrean Guard piggy bank.
Wow, actually that's really cool. Make sure that when you do that, just put up line drawings of it. That
oh, that's
people
right.
Actually
I need to find that original art. I need to go to Rebel Scum and see if I can go in their archives and find the coverage.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right. We want to tease it, you know, make people not realize what fine quality item we have.
But, oh, my gosh.
You know, speaking of ceramic items, though, I wanted to touch on something that I know Jeffrey has a sizable collection of and a particular fondness for, and that is the cookie jar.
Yes. We could talk about the Death Star cookie jar and the mystery behind it, but we don't need to.
I was actually hoping to lead toward that in the a broader look at the cookie jar. I guess the earliest would be Sigma's R2-D2.
That's the first one that I can come up with off the top of my head. R2-D2, and also, I don't know where he falls relative to R2, but there was a C-3PO cookie jar, which is obnoxiously rare.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that's because it came out first, so there were less of them produced, or if R2 was so saturated that they just hit 3PO and moved on, or he was actually back metalized. So I don't know if maybe it was just too costly to produce, because it's at the same price point as R2. But yeah, either R2 or the C-3PO were the earliest.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I think that in existence today, there are probably, I want to say, a 60-40 margin of headless to complete R2-D2 cookie jars still in existence.
Yes, I have a headless one myself. It was a gift.
That is the most common way you can find this. Many are the people I've known who have what's left of the cookie jar. Because I think from the pictures I've seen, it doesn't look like they designed any sort of indentions sufficient in the top for you to get a good grip with your hand, like a bowling ball or something.
Yeah.
And so I imagine more devastating childhood memories came from the R2-D2 cookie jar.
I actually have a search set up on a popular auction website that watches for those R2-D2 cookie jars in the heads. And over the past 5+ years, I've only ever seen one come through that was just the head.
Wow.
And it ended up going for over $200.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, if I'm spending $200, I want the whole jar.
Well, wow. And at that point, I'm sure you could find someone selling the whole thing for that.
And do what,
less.
Just drop the bottom? Then you buy a whole one and you're still stuck with the bottom.
Well, then at that point, you can then give it to some hapless friend and say, you know, I know where you can find the head for me.
That's horrible. I thought you were going to say something like, you know, put like a floral arrangement in
yeah,
and give it,
a
give it to your
no,
wife.
Absolutely not. I have to play it as dark and cruel as possible.
Yeah, yeah. No such luck in being nice about it.
Well, as we are graced with the presence of the author of the Star Wars Super Collectors Wish Book series.
Don't gloss this over. I would like for everybody to know that Jedi Cole is the one who gave me the bottom of my R2, and it is currently in my kitchen, and it does have a floral arrangement in it. So you two are walking on some very tenacious ground here.
This is very true. But, you know, had you been able to obtain the head, the floral arrangement would have to go.
Oh, yeah, I'd pitch it.
So long, flowers! Well, in fact, Catherine and I had come by that very cookie jar from her cousin, probably resulting in traumatic childhood memories for her children. And we'd had the thing for years, and it wasn't really ever bothersome to me. And it was certainly pre-eBay, the idea of finding the top one of those. But it was one of those things I just never could come up with a good thing to do with it. And I thought, you know, if anybody would appreciate having just the body and utilize it for a flower arrangement, it would be Jeffrey.
I have fewer than 20 Star Wars items displayed in my main home, and that is one of them, sir.
So that in itself is very impressive, because it resides amongst a number of incredibly cool cookie jars, including that infamous Death Star one. But
which does exist.
Yes, indeed, and thereby hung a tale. Let's touch on that real quick, and then I'll pose my question for you. Yes, the Death Star cookie jar has a fun little tale behind it, if you wouldn't mind just like giving us a short version.
Well, it was just a merry chase. Star Jars announced it, and of course they went out of business before it was produced. And then it was put up on the shop.starwars.com when they were around, but it was only ever shown as a line drawing. And so I, of course, the moment it went up, went ahead and threw my money on it. Well, I put in a reserve for it. And within a year or so, it disappeared, you know, backordered, never to happen. And then shortly before shop.starwars.com went out of business, I got a notification that my order shipped. And it's kind of like, well, what's this? You know, it said your order was shipped. When you go and look at the order, it says this order's been deleted. They did, unfortunately, hit my credit card, so I didn't get it for free. But a box showed up. It's a Death Star cookie jar that appears very much to look quite a bit like the original Star Jars, the star that was never produced, but there's no licensee information on the jar, and it came in a plain white mailer box.
Wow.
So it's really, really kind of a mystery Death Star cookie jar.
Wow.
But it had been announced as available for probably about a year, and then another 3 years or so it was not available, and it disappeared for another year or two. So, I mean, this thing was a good part of a decade between the time that it was for sale and the time that this mystery box shows up on my doorstep.
Almost like the fossil star, the very first fossil Star Wars watch, which had the Imperial and Rebel symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And a brushed metal. To me, it was the most sophisticated because it just didn't, you know, at a distance. Some of them you could be on the surface of the moon and look down, oh, that fossil watch is a Star Wars. Down on Earth, because you can actually see that it's a Star Wars watch from orbit. But, mm-hmm. you know, that one was very subtle. And to me, that was the best design. It was the first one they came out with. And I remember seeing this big full-page ad somewhere for it. And then actually at the time I was working for Diamond, they offered it. I put in an order for it, and that never happened. I guess Diamond couldn't get enough orders to where Fossil would do business with them or what have you. So I just assumed it never happened. I figured it never got made. And then years later, I was actually able to buy one at a convention and mm-hmm. realize that it had been made. But I'd sent inquiries to Fossil, and all I would get was stuff about the other Star Wars watches. No one at Fossil seemed to even know that it was actually made. And many years later, I found out that had you bought it brand new, it even came in a kind of Death Star-themed box.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Because we saw a complete one at another convention years later.
So the happy ending, you got your watch and Jeffrey got his Death Star cookie jar. The interesting tidbit about that Death Star cookie jar, a lot of people don't know this, is that many Bothans died in order to get that cookie jar.
That's why the box was so plain, because the Bothans usually took care of the packaging.
Well, yeah.
Printed in Botha. So,
okay.
Probably what I'm guessing, somebody went back to the warehouse, saw a large stack sitting on a pallet that had been there for years, went, oh, what's this? Oh, heck, we did get those cookie jars. Well, fill all the orders.
Rather how I came by a giant stack of Star Wars vehicle P2 promo card. The warehouse where I was working closed, and presumably those were sent to us by Tops to distribute amongst all the retailers.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing probably just showed up in some nondescript form. Nobody knew what they were. They couldn't receive it as merchandise. It just sat in an office for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, oh, here, you're keen on Star Wars.
It was a true warehouse find.
Yes, indeed. And once I found out what they were really worth, it really helped us through a lot of dark times, as it were.
Well, it helps
it
work when you cornered the market. You had them all.
That's pretty. We may well have had every single one of them. I don't know. But
wow.
Darn close.
It wasn't a Diamond exclusive. It was a Jedi Cole exclusive.
But, you know, kind of looking back over your years as collectors, especially Jeffrey, you've either held or owned or are certainly aware of darn near everything that ever happened, and then some. What are some of the strangest? I mean, you know, obviously Eddie's traumatized by the Jar Jar sucker, but Jeffrey, what are some of the weirdest things you've seen a license happen?
When I can talk about the Jar Jar water pipe, then
the what?
Or there's always the unlicensed as well.
The Jar Jar water pipe is by far the most cool unlicensed item. There is also a Vader bong, which I have there beside it. I guess I was starting a pipe collection, and only two ever came out. So, collection complete. Well done.
Oh, wow.
I'm guessing that, though, with the Jar Jar one, is if
yes.
you toke enough, Jar Jar becomes a fascinating character.
He speaks to you.
He speaks to you. Oh, my gosh.
It's like, wow, I get it now, man. Yes, Tommy Chong joins the fun.
Are you speaking from experience, or is that just...
No. Mine is still mint in package.
Okay, there you go, sir. Very well done. Yeah, there's some crazy...
Bill can't go licensed with this, but there were some toys out of Brazil. They were squeaky toys that, according to the pictures on them, they were baby toys. But the way they were constructed, I wouldn't get anywhere near an infant for, you know, fear of the squeaker coming out. But, you know, a little squeaky Amidala was pretty cool.
Huh. They have an Anakin, like a young Anakin?
They do.
See, that one makes perfect
sense.
Sounds
authentic. Wait.
Yeah, it's like... I mean, that's all Anakin was a squeaky toy.
Yeah, basically.
Actually, I stand corrected. It wasn't just young Anakin that was just a squeaky toy. It was pretty much episode 1 through 3.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. If we go licensed, in the San Diego Comic-Con in 2008, which means you may still be able to find this, there was actually a clone-painted ammo box. Not sure what that was designated for, whether it was Legos, but it was actually a metal ammo box with the clone, you know, the face that's normally on the front of the helmet painted on the side of the ammo box. So that's a little odd.
I think it's for your active duty servicemen who are also Star Wars collectors. You know, if you're on a gunnery
the clone forces cover very well in the armed forces.
Because you never know when you're in a combat theater. You really want to know Captain Rex is there with you.
Absolutely. Got to go back to the prequel era, 1999, Tiger Electronics. There was a Royal Naboo Starship answering machine. It was a digital answering machine, so no tape was necessary, but it was nice back metalized silver. That's always fun to play with.
I had no idea. I know Tiger had a license and did some just really bizarre. I remember there was a... Are they the ones who did the Naboo Starfighter kind of handheld game thing that looked like a, oh, like an old 70s and 80s style price gun?
Yes.
You just, I mean, I've seen those things, and my first instinct is just like to just push the tip of it against things and price them. I feel like I'm at a grocery at the A&P or something, and a new shipment of stovetop stuffing has come in. I've got to get this on the shelf.
I don't know that you'd really consider it a licensed item, but in order to celebrate episode one, why are we stuck in this? Oh, what do they call those? Was it the Triad restaurants? It was the Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut.
Chicken Taco Pizza.
There was actually a bottle of champagne issued to franchise holders. They had a Star Wars episode one label on it in a Star Wars box, and it had the trio of restaurants down at the bottom, but that's always one of my favorites. Nothing like officially licensed champagne.
Am I remembering correctly from some image I have in my head from like an issue of Bantha Tracks that there was like a Lucasfilm wine or something at one time?
No, there still is. Skywalker Ranch wine.
That's right, Scott.
Oh, wow.
I've had three bottles of it, and I've got to tell you, it's mighty tasty.
Some unusual licensed items that I remember were, I mean, they're not just like off the wall crazy, but you kind of wonder how well they sold were some of the Halloween masks that they made. Because they made
by Ben Cooper.
Yeah, they made like the Ognots. They made Barada and Klaatu and Weequay. They made a lot of characters that you only saw in the movies for like a few seconds. So you're thinking, how well did those masks sell as compared, say, to the Yoda and Chewbacca mask?
I wanted to be Superman. I want to be Pig Guy. That's an Ognot. No, that's Pig Guy.
Yeah,
trick or treat, give me candy.
The Ognot was one of the worst looking.
Oh, yeah. It looked like Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
With tusks.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember seeing Klaatu, the earliest one that they put out. And what surprised me was they did, I guess they were going to like force you to be a cosplayer or something.
Uh-huh.
Because they didn't try to like do a sculpt of his hood. I think they were literally trying to replicate the mask that then the costume hood would have been put on the actor.
Oh, okay.
On top of the mask.
Uh-huh.
And then later, I think people weren't buying that, so they actually went back and did a re-release where the hood element was sculpted on as well.
Okay.
So you didn't just have to be Lizard Man anymore.
That's right. I think a lot of people are like, well, what are you? No, it's Star Wars, really.
Yeah, there's Hammerhead and Walrus Man and Snaggletooth and Lizard Man.
Lizard Man. Well, and we're actually getting up on the hour, rather more surprisingly, sooner than I expected. So, first off, I want to thank Jeffrey for taking time out of his evening to come be on the show with us. And we could probably do six or seven months of twice a month shows on just this topic and still not cover everything.
Uh-huh.
Especially in MP4, so we can flash all sorts of pictures.
That's true.
We can invent a new game called What the Heck Is That? We put pictures up, and people have to try to guess what it is.
Oh, wow.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask, just because I was really curious about this, because my big thing with Star Wars collecting is the comics. I'm really trying to amass, the entire comic collection. But I'm just curious out of the two of y'all, if you have to pick one thing out of your Star Wars collection, with me would be the comic books, what would it be with y'all?
Oh, what do you grab in case of fire?
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Wow.
I'm going to go with my Hamilton collection plates.
Okay. Those are nice, man.
Yes, they are.
Love the artwork on those things.
I actually have a Han Solo Hamilton collection plate. that if I ever put the idea that I need to get a plate hanger together with the fact that I have the plate, when it's like I'm not home at midnight or something and think, you know, gosh, I need to get that, I will eventually have that on display here at the house. I would have to say I'm going to remain true to my fallback that has been such for 20-some-odd years or even close to 30 years. I can't remember the first time the question was ever posed to me, but I would have to grab the California Originals Chewbacca mug.
The Rumpf mug.
The Rumpf mug, or the Julie mug.
Yes.
I'd have to grab my monkey mug. A Christmas present from way back when, and really, you know, for about 6 weeks after I got it, I would actually used it as a drinking vessel, and much to my shame, it actually probably took a couple of turns through the dishwasher before I decided, you know, this isn't something that needs to be used for its intended purpose.
Yeah.
In fact, its intended purpose was for it not to be used.
I had that same problem. I have a 1990 or 89 Indiana Jones coffee mug that I got at Disney World when we went there, and I keep trying to leave it in the Indy Museum, but somehow on set every so often on a Saturday morning, I'll see Colleen walking in with it, with her coffee, using it. I was like, no, that's not to be drank out of. It's a museum piece.
Sounds like a friend of mine growing up.
It belongs in a museum.
Very well. How did I miss that?
This friend of mine who had some of the Sigma Port Bisque pieces, the little statues.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And his parents had a maid come in, and she used to come in and clean their room, and he would come home and find that she had put the bisque pieces in the toy box.
Whoa.
And I think they finally had to explain to her that some things weren't necessarily toys. I'd have to go with grabbing the Wookiee mug because it really was one of those, in a way, almost like a turning point, because, you know, here was something like, oh, this is so cool, and it's like, hey, it's fun to drink out of, because you're drinking out of Chewie's head like chilled monkey brains.
Like in the holiday special.
Exactly. You can actually fill it with wholesome Wookiee floor soup.
Okay, I know we're like really, really, really short on time, but just very quickly, tell me something that, and I'll start off just to get y'all going, but something in your collection that you're ashamed to admit that you collect. But, okay, my thing is the Star Wars Pogs.
Hey, that hurts.
Oh, well, see, I love them. I mean, it took me forever to amass a set, and I've even gone out of my way to find as many of the bootleg Pogs as I could. But if I admit that to anybody else, I get strange looks like, are you serious? It's like, you didn't leave that behind in 1994? It's like, no, they're Pogs. They're awesome. They're Star Wars. So I think, for me, I think it would probably be my Star Wars Pogs. But anyways, so what about the two of y'all?
Go, Cole.
I'm going to have to say, I can't say that there's anything I'm ashamed of because, you know, I've borne the weight of being a collector for far too many years. You know, I was a Star Wars collector when it wasn't cool to be a Star Wars collector. But I would have to say that if I want to go, say, let's say bordering on shame, is the obsessive search that I got myself into when I found myself in possession of a handful of the Micro Machines mini heads.
Oh, yeah.
They were like little heads of different characters. Bring me the head of Greedo.
And put a little man inside it.
Exactly. And they would open up, and you'd have like this little vignette. You'd have a single little Micro Machines figurine in there. And, you know, you open it up, and like the Jawa, I think, is some sort of like Tatooine scene. And it's like the tops of the moisture evaporators.
Yeah.
It's open. When you close it, it's the Jawa's eyes, which is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And inside will be a little bitty Jawa. And I remember distinctly seeing an ad for Pizza Hut. It was supposed to have a giveaway with those. You go, like, you know, you buy a personal pan pizza and you get a Wampa head or a Duros head or something like that.
Yeah.
And I go into the Pizza Hut during the campaign. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, gosh.
And I think this was a Death Star.
Yeah, like a personal pan pizza and a Wampa head, please.
That's right. Well, you really feel like, you know, to borrow from Patton Oswalt, you feel like Caesar at that point. I'll have a personal pan pizza and the head of a wampa. So that fell flat.
Sorry.
Nobody seemed to know what was going on, and as near as I could determine, I don't think the campaign, all that stuff got out to the stores, to the actual restaurants. And, you know, years later, and thanks to eBay, I was able to piece together all of those. And I think at this point, the Stormtrooper, which I think was only available in a box set, is the only piece that I don't have. But I do have the elusive C-3PO, which is metalized. And with that one,
that was actually a mail-away premium.
That what?
3PO was a mail-away.
Actually, and it was also apparently a UK box set thing.
Ah.
I found somebody on eBay, and I thought it was the only place to find it, was in this box set of about six or eight of them that was apparently a UK thing. And they wanted, of course, the Sky for it, and I guess somebody must have had the mail-away one, because I did manage to finally score one in it by buying a lot that had a bunch I already had.
Oh, wow.
But I literally was just got to the point where I was obsessed with getting all of them. It was this Pokemon moment.
What, really? We had to invoke Pokemon for the second time in this episode? Twice in one episode. Oh, my gosh. Well, Jeffrey, you got anything to add to the Hall of Shame?
I'm going to have to wrap us back around to our Undrews discussion. Being someone who, Pokemon Reference 3, has to have them all. Hanes Underwear has a line of little boys' underwears. We're talking 2T, 3T size. And so here I am, a fairly aged old man, gray beard, plowing through little boy underwear. And as I'm taking my three packaging variations up to the Target, you know, checkout, the nice cashier is so kind to me and, oh, you must have little boy. Oh, and how old is he? And, oh, and he likes Star Wars. And you have that moment where do you say, why, yes, he does, I'm bringing him right. Or do you go, why, no, these are for me.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. We've all had that moment where we have to lie to the cashier that the toys we're buying are for our kids that we don't actually have.
Yeah,
but I've never gone down the road of actually having to lie about underoos. But it's funny.
Well, someday we'll have grandchildren. Perhaps by then we'll be able to let them go. Oh, but until then, they're mine.
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious.
Now we know the secret shame of collectors everywhere. So hopefully if you felt Underoo shame, or you've become just sort of Ahab obsessed with completing a collection, you know you're in good company now. Again, Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us and being a part of the show. Do you have a website to plug?
Not really. I just want to thank you both very much for letting me be your special guest on Your Incredible Number 2.
Oh, my gosh. It's our pleasure. You brought so much to this episode with your vast knowledge of the world of Star Wars collectibles.
We thank you for being a part of this. But unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap this one up, but we will be revisiting this very topic with some other guests who are fellow collectors down the line. After we get through the seven or eight episodes Eddie and I have already cooked up to follow this one. And Eddie, you want to plug your site?
Yeah, you can find me at eddiemedina.com. There's not a whole lot right there because I'm in the middle of redoing the whole website. You can also find me on Facebook. You search for Eddie Medina, Ed Med Art. That's EDMEDART. I'm sure you can find me on there. And I just wanted to say, as far as since we're talking about Star Wars collectibles and licensing, to all the listeners out there, just, you know, in amassing your Star Wars collection, just go after what you like. You know, that's what I would leave with y'all. There's a lot of it out there. Some of it is very valuable, like the spice from the mines of Kessel, but a lot of it is Bantha Poodoo, so choose wisely.
Very well said. And with that, we will conclude. We'll tune in 2 weeks when the Force will be with you yet again. And this has been the Rancor Pit. Again, thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, Eddie. And we will speak to everyone again very soon.